Shavuot Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is a daf Tzadik Gimel, and we're holding right near the top of the daf. And I want to just remind you, the last thing that we learned was that when it came to the question of the chelev that penetrates in the renal sinus so that it goes into the actual kidneys, so we had a raya that we wanted to bring that it's not usser, which is actually the way Ravatz saw it, and that's because since we learned that the idea of the chelev is always if it's uncovered by muscle. But if it's covered by muscle, then it's not considered to be a chelev. So then we said the same thing should be true over here. When the Torah identifies something as al hakisavi or al hakilayon, it means on top, not that it's covered over by organ meat or by some type of muscle meat. Okay, so gufa. Let's look into that a little bit. That's where we were up to. And Omar Rabbah Omar Rabbina Meshwal, chelev shabasar chofe oto mutar. So if there is muscle that covers this chelev, that's not chelev. But the question is that really true? Because didn't Reb Abba also quote Shmuel as saying that haitarba detute matni asur? And actually, the chelev that is underneath the motnayim, the loins of the animal, so it says over there, that it's usher. And this is the same mimer of Shmuel. Now, you cannot see that usher after you take off the skin of the animal. You cannot see that, I meant that chelev. You cannot see that chelev unless you actually separate out the salib from the motnaim. And that means that you have to remove the muscle that is on top of it. So then why is it usher? If it's covered with the meat of the motnaim, of the loins of the animal, it shouldn't be chelev, according to what Shmuel himself just said. Omar Abaye, well, it's all very nice when you see an animal that's sitting in a butcher shop that has been flayed, and now you think that's the way the animal is. But that's not the way the animal is. I got news for you. Animals move, and when they're alive, obviously, what you see now is a collapsed animal. And what you see in its lifetime is when it's going to be moving and so on. That chelev that looks like it's covered by muscle is not covered all the time. It depends when it's moving. And when it moves its loins, it's not going to be covering. Actually, it'll be pulled down and the fat is going to be exposed completely. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, look, I can tell you, I don't claim to be an expert at these things. I mean, I'm not a butcher myself. I'm not the son of a butcher, so I don't really know much about it. But I can tell you one thing I remember very clearly is that when we were learning these sugyas, I was told, here, and I remember very clearly, I used to say in the Beit HaMidrash, don't look at an animal in a butchery. You have no idea how that reflects on the real animal when it's alive. Behema b'chaya, beruke mifarka, a lot of organs that seem to be connected and one on top of the other. It's not that way in real life. Another thing is that the chelev that is on, and we've agreed to use the yeshivisha pronunciation, even though it doesn't make much sense. So the chelev sha'al hemses, ubet hakosolut, is asurin, and it's anushkarit, because it's included, it says over here, this is what's called the chelev sha'al hakerev. It does not mean this is the essential chelev sha'al hakerev. It's just saying that since the chelev ha-mechaseh al hakerev is listed separately from the chelev sha'al hakerev, so basically what we understand is that the very thick membrane that covers the entire bottom of the abdomen, so that means the stomach and the intestines, and they're all held in by what appears to be one gigantic piece of covering. And that It's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about what was added by the words Chelev Asher Al HaKerev instead of the Chelev HaMechaseh HaKerev. And that's what Shmuel was saying over here. That part is referring to not the thick layer of fat, which is a very strong membrane around the abdomen. And actually, it's referring to the Chelev that's just over the amsis and the Beit HaKosot, and you will remember that was the omesim, the reticulum, that was the place in which you, after you have the very difficult to digest cellulose, is put into, it sits for a while in the first stomach, and then it goes into the second stomach and the third stomach, where it's turned into what is called the cud, and that is shaped like a lot of Beit HaKosot, is shaped like a lot of little cups. Each one of those cups creates a little chewable cud, which is then regurgitated, chewed, and so on. And then it goes through at the end into the real kivah. But the fat that's on top of that is a separate piece of fat from the actual thick fat that covers the entire abdomen. This is what the Torah is referring to, the chelev al hakerev, as opposed to the chelev hamechaseh et hakerev. Amar Rav, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Another mimer, this also that Rabbi Yehuda said over from Shmuel, is that hai tarba de kilibusta asur va'anesh anush karet. So there's a bone at the end, I shouldn't say at the end, but almost at the end of the shidra, the spinal column, and it's on top of the actual hip bone, and you have all of the vertebrae that go later on afterwards into the tail. So humans have a little bit of that bone, the sacrum, and that's actually fused vertebrae. And the thing is that over here, there's a little bit, what we're talking about over here, the chelev that is attached to that is chelev that's on top of that bone, and it's behind the motnai. So this is what is known as, not the whole thing, but this is part of what's known as the chelev she'al hakisalim, because basically it also covers the flanks of the animal. Obviously, it's not the whole thing, but it's a part of the chelev she'al hakisalim. Yomer Rabbi Abba, Yomer Rabbi Yehuda, Yomer Shmuel, chutin shebiyad asuri. So here we're talking about threads. Now remember, we learned before that when we're talking about the chelev, the Torah only mentioned the actual chelev. When we said lafuke chutin, and therefore if they're just chutin, then they should not be asur. And here, all of a sudden, we find Shmuel saying, well, if we've got these chutim, if they're in the hand, we haven't spoken about the hand at all. We've been talking about chutim that were in the same area where the Gidon Asher was and so on. But here we're talking about in the hand, meaning in the foreleg, and he's saying that these are puzzles. That means on the shoulder and along the leg, maybe those things, he's saying, do have a halacha of chelev? Didn't we just say that they don't? Omer of Safra, now Rav Safra understood him to mean that, and that didn't make sense because we already said that chutim are not considered to be chelev. Moshe, he called him. We call him Moshe because every gadol b'dorei is considered to be like Moshe b'dorei. So this is a real honorific to call somebody Moshe. Moshe, mi omer rachmana. Lotechu Bisra, I don't understand what you're talking about. The Torah said, don't eat meat? I mean, this gotta mean you're telling me that they're really called chelev? They're not chelev, they just have a din of meat. Oh, my Rava, so Rava said back to Rav Safra, listen here, you, Mr. Moshe, mi yomer rachmona echol dama? I never said that it was usher because it's chelev. I said it's usher because these are veins, and there's always blood that's left in them. That's why they're usher. They're like very thickly filled with blood. If you cut them open and you salt them, so then fine. It's like anything else. I'm just telling you it's usher unless you cut them open, because how's the blood going to get out? And therefore, if you did cut them and you did a regular malicha, so then you could even cook this in your cholent, which you love, if it would be something like liver and so on, so then just the malicha wouldn't allow you to put it in the cholent. Also, another maimer that Shmuel Taina is that the first ama of the intestines that come out of the keva, which is called the duodenum, that's like that first area right after the food is ejected into the intestines, you have to take the chelev of that first ama, you have to take it off because that is also included in the chelev she'al hadakin. And therefore, it's part of what, when he says this is the chelev she'al hadakin, what he's referring to is the machlokas that we had before between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, and that, but pashtus, is what that's what they were arguing in. Was it the chelev that was on the dakin, or was it the chelev, remember, according to Rabbi Akiva, it was the chelev that was actually on the keva itself? This is what they were arguing about, was that first ama. And when it says this is, this is how Rashi understands it, this is, it means this is that machloket that we had all the way back in the early part of the Masechet on Memtet, right at the bottom of Memtet Amud Aleph, going up to the Amud Beis. V'yomer of Yehuda, chutin sheba'oketz asurin. So any of these threads that are come out into the flanks, the rear of the animal, those are all basically going to be considered to be usur, and they are along the ribs. So they're obviously not really, because we said chutim are not usur, they're not really usur midiraisa, they're usur midirabbana. And I want you to know that we've got five such references. And the ones we're talking about, that these threads, these chutim, that are coming down across, down the end of the ribs, that they are, even though they're just chutim, they are usur, then nonetheless, you have to know that there are actually different ones. The oketz would be the rump area, so that we're saying here that there are actually different dinim. Some of these have to be pulled out. You have three of them on the right side, and you have two of them on the left side. Now, these are nerves and branch nerves, and they branch. So you've got the three that are on the right. They bifurcate. Each one of them bifurcates into two, so that those three, each one turns into two, which gives you six. And the two on the left side, they branch off into three, which gives you six. And why is it important for me to know this? Because if you don't pull these out while the animal is still warm after shechita, you're going to have a hell of a time getting it out, because you're going to have to, like this, if the animal is still warm after the shechita, the whole nerve will pull out if you pull it out from the top. So nafkamina di shalifu adechamimi, if the animal is still warm, then mishtafe, they will pull out easily. But if you wait, then you're going to have to dig them out. And if you dig them out, then you need to know how much bifurcation there is in order to be able to find all of the remnants of those nerves. That's why I'm telling you how it is that they will bifurcate. Amar Abaye, some say it was actually Rav Yehuda. We have five different places in which we have problems with chutim. Now, we said before that chutim of just chelev is not considered to be usur, because chelev amar Rachmana and not the chutim of the chelev, right? So, but there are other things that actually give you problems of chutim, as we just saw when we were talking about the veins in the arm and the foreleg. So we've got five different places where we have such problems. Three of those places are problems of chelev, which obviously will only be usur b'rabbanan, because chutim are not usur b'shem chelev, but these are chutim that are attached to like major big, thick pieces of chalev. And because of that, the Rabbanan asked them. So three of them are from chalev. Two out of the five are veins that are filled with blood, and not necessarily veins, it could be arteries, but the point is that these are blood vessels that unless you cut them open to get the blood out, you are going to have a problem with hardened blood that's in them. So here is where they are. The chutim that are on the spleen and the chutim that are on the kafle, which are the flanks of the animal, and the chutim that are on the kidneys, as we saw, those are all chelev issues. But when you've got the chutim in the arm, which is the foreleg, and chutim in the jaw of the animal, those are usur mishum dama. That's very important to know the difference, because l'nai nafka mina, well, obviously, the ones that are only usur mishum dama, if you cut them open in order to be able to release the blood, and then you did a malicha, so then there's no problem, as long as you get the blood out. Masha'in came, where the Rabbanan asked something mitam chelev, obviously, you can't magically turn chelev into shuman, so that let letakanta, there's nothing you can do about that. Furthermore, there's not only five places where we have threads that are problematic, there are five places that we also have membranes that are problematic. And there too, three of them are usher because they're chelev type membranes, and two of them are usher because they're filled with blood. So here too, it's the same ones. It's the spleen, the tachle, and it's the kafle, and it's the kuyota, like we said before about the chutim. These are usher mishum tarba. But the ones that are on the testicles, the bay, or they're on the brain, the mukra, those are usher not because of fat, they're usher because of dam. Rabbi Yehuda bar Hoshaya, so he used to work in the kitchen of Levi, Bereda Vunabachia, so he was serving him, and he was preparing the tol for him, and Havi Kagoyim Le Mi'ilai, and he was taking off the membrane just by making it even. So remember, we have the question of what do you have to be? You have to dig in, or is it okay just to make everything smooth at the same level? So he was just making it smooth, and he took off the membrane only from the area where it sticks out. And he left the rest. Now, remember, we talked before about the different parts of the tchol. And here, too, there is essentially the blood vessel that comes directly into the tchol, looks like a nipple, and that area is actually, it's very close, connected to the chalef. So because of that, Rav Yehuda bar Hoshaya took off that piece, because that's connected directly to the chalef that's al gabei hadakin, and because of that, he held that was a deraisa, so he had to remove the whole thing. But not the rest of it. It's enough to take it off from the top, because that was only an issur d'rabbanan. That the Machmirani felt that if you just take it off at the top, it's not visible anymore. You don't have to do more than that. So Levi said to him, hey, chot beitfei, take it all off, man. Get deeper into this. Remember Naftali's song, dig the gid. And therefore, the same thing is true over here of the chalev. Anyway, so just then, his father, Levi's father was Vuna Barchia, and he listened to him as he's yelling at Rav Yehuda to take off the whole thing. So he says to Levi, listen here, my boy, your grandpa, which is your mother's father, who was a Talmud of Rav, he quoted Rav, who was his grandfather? Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, man, this is heavy-duty stuff. Your grandfather said that it's okay. So who are you to go around and you're saying, no, you got to dig it out? And this is what Rav said, that this is how he quoted Rav. Lo asra teira elisha al hadad bilvad. You're only asra midiraisa to take any of the chelev that is right over the dad, which is the area that the blood enters into the tol, into the spleen. But you don't have to take off the membrane from the entire tol. And Levi said, with all due respect to Grandpa, I don't think that's true. Because Eini, what about as Rav Nuna brought in the Braita? Amar Rav Nuna Tano, klum she'al hatchol asur. If you have the membrane on the tchol, it's asur, but only min rabbanim. Ka'in chayavin olav. Now I ask you, what was he referring to? He's not talking about the area on the dad that you keep telling me that that's the only place I got to worry about, and that's exactly what Rav Yehuda was doing over here, why I yelled at him. That can't be what he means, because the part that's al-hadad is directly connected to the chelev that is actually al-hadaki. And so why would you not be chayev? You would be chayev. Ella dekule. He's got to be referring to the krum that's on the rest of the tchol. And you're telling me that he shouldn't worry about that. Well, how do you explain the Braita, Dad? Oh, I give in. Tanya, Tanya. If it says it, it says it. I can't argue on the Braita, he said to Levi. So, Levi came out on top. Gufa. Let's take a look at that Braita once it was already brought up. Omer of Amnuna. Tana krumsh alatol asur. So that's asur, but you're not chayiv. That was the first part that we quoted earlier. And the krum shagabe kuya is also. The same thing is true of membrane on top of the kidney. It's also minarabanan, but you're not chayev. But the problem is that there's a braita that says exactly the opposite. Vatanya, chayov and olav, you would be chayev, koras for achilas chelev, if you ate the krum of the kulia, of the either of the kloyot, obviously, or on the tchol. Try to explain that. Well, the contradiction between the braita regabe the din of the tchol, we know it's very simple. One was talking about the Shechayev Karas. We said that. We know where that is. That's Keneged Hadad. That is the part that is right by that place where the blood goes in. It's called the Helam, by the way. And that place is, in fact, Mechuber to the Chelev, which is Algabe Hadakin. And that isn't the right time. Hashem came, as Levi explained, the rest of it, the other one, that says you're not Chayev Karas, it's talking about Shalom Keneged Adad, and that's exactly how Levi said. You see that it's Usher, even if it's Shalom Keneged Adad. And the part about the Kulia is also not a problem. Kulia, Kulia, Nami Lokasha, because this Brisa that we just read, that your Chayev Karas is talking about the Chelev, which is the on top, and it's not covered by anything else. But the other one that says that it's Osir, but it's only Osir min Rabbanan, so that is actually only an Isir de Rabbanan because it's Bitata. That's the membrane that is the Rabbanan that we talked about, our problems with membranes. Now, once already we brought up testicles, there's more to know about them. Because you will often have testicles that are essentially, because maybe, I don't know, they tried, or they did, castrate the animal or whatever. So these are called Bei Hashilta. So Bei Hashilta are the equivalent of the dinim that we had before about a leg that's hanging loose, right? So we had the whole machlokus about is Misa Oysa Nipul and is Shkita Oysa Nipul. We ended up saying that Shkita is not Oysa Nipul, and that it actually, the Shkita works for any organs that are hanging loose. If you have a leg that's hanging loose and it's not actually gangrenous, it's clearly it has some kind of connection still to the blood supply of the body. Well, the same thing is true of these testicles. They might be inside the scrotum, but they certainly don't turn gangrenous, and this is very common. And so, what would be the din? Do they have a din of Avram and Achai? Or are they actually considered to be the equivalent of any other loose, like the loose leg that we had before? So Rav Ami and Rav Asi argue about this. We don't know who said what, but we know that one of them says that it is usher to eat those testicles, and one of them says that it is mutter. What's this for? Man da asar, read a low carbarian. Look, I mean, these never actually heal. Once you've actually detached the testicle, it doesn't regenerate a blood supply and so on, and certainly it doesn't regenerate any of its other essential parts. And because of that, this is an Avram min Achai. And why would it be mutter to eat? Now, obviously, he's not arguing on the whole sugya before, where we said about the din of shechita, is that the shechita is eino oisa nipo. He said, oh, there's no reason why testicles are different than anything else. But what this means is that there's an Avram and Achadizah, Tosfos explains it, that it means midrabbanan is considered to be Avram and Achai, since it makes such a big deal of detaching testicles because it's part of husbandry. So therefore, they answered it midrabbanan. Whereas Mandashori says, look, if they were really detached from the body, then they obviously would have turned gangrenous. I mean, you can't have something that's not provided with a blood supply and it's just sitting around. So it's clearly, they still have some life that is left in them like any other Aver Meduldo. Mashenkein, whoever it was that held, that's considered to be Aver Menachai, he says that doesn't prove anything. The fact that they don't actually decay is because they're basically well protected in the scrotum. They're never exposed to any bacteria or anything. And lo kashalik puavira. Masha'inkein, the mandiyamar who held that they're not considered to be Avram and Achai, he says, look, you can't prove that they're not living because they don't actually regenerate. That's okay. Not all things regenerate once they've been damaged. So these are damaged testicles. They're not going to become usable again. Omalei Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Shaman Bar Abba. Hani be'e chashilta sharia. But look, I'll tell you what the din is. The din is they're definitely, obviously, midiraisa. They're just considered to be like any other Aver Hamedul Dal. And they're really mutter even the Rabbanan. That's what I would tell you. That's how we paskin here in Eretz Yisrael. Now you, because you come from Bavel, and you're planning on going back, as Tosus explains, and therefore you're still stuck with the dinim of Bavel, can't get you to make aliyahs, you want to still keep second day yontif, so then don't eat testicles. Too bad. At least not if they're chashilta. That's a good reason to make aliyah, right? So, hane be chashilta, or sharyon, but you can't eat them. At lo techo mishum al titosh torati mecha, because you're stuck with the minhagim of Bavel. And they are noyeg, that they absolutely do not eat it. Okay, now we've learned before, Lagabi, the dinim of the five types of different krumim. So we said that the krum that is around the testicles is usher because of dam, not because of chela. So Omar Mar Baravashi, Hani Be'i de Gadia. If you're talking about testicles of a kid, and this means any kid, it doesn't mean it has to be a Gidi, specifically as Rashi says, it's just the way we always, kids is meaning the little ones. So immature animals are not considered to be actually real testicles because they don't work yet. An atlat in yom, it's the first 30 days of life, sharyon below klipa, you don't have to take off the membrane. But from that point on, it depends. If they're active testicles and they're producing sperm, so e azran, then they're usr. Because in order to produce sperm, they have to have a good blood supply. So that means that we're going to have this problem of dam. But ilo azran, if they do not yet produce sperm, then they're mutter. Well, how the heck am I supposed to know? What, do I have a microscope? So, mino yadina. How do we know whether they're usr? Because e itu shuraki sumke asiri. If there's like red lines in them, so that means that there's those blood vessels only come in once they actually start producing sperm. But in less special like sumkein, then they are mutters. If you don't see any kind of reddening, red lines actually, I should say, then they're still immature. And then you don't have to take off the krum because of dam. Now, how about other things that are also saturated with blood and you're going to have a problem because of dam? So there are other things that are problems. Let's say just a plain umtze. Got a piece of meat. Now, very often, you find a piece of meat which is dark red, and obviously, it has been bruised there's been a lot of blood vessels that apparently were broken by an impact, and blood saturated that area of the animal's muscle. So now you've got a lot of blood that's been absorbed into the actual muscle fibers, and the meat looks very deep red as opposed to normal coloration. Or if you have, we said before, that this is the same idea of the testicles, but the machlokas over here between Rashi and Tosfos, it's not here, but elsewhere, Rashi and Tosfos argue about whether this is referring to bei that are discolored because of the same reason, the umtzi. So they were actually impacting and they're red because of ruptured blood vessels, or whether it's just talking about the sugi that we just spoke about, which is how Tosfos learns. And the mizraki. So remember we said before, the mizraki are the vridim in the very thick vridim in the neck of the animal filled with blood. And there, in these three cases, pleading by Rav Acha v'Ravina, by the way, says the Gemara, you should just know that all over Shas, wherever we've got a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina, it's always Ravina who goes l'kula. It's always Rav Acha who goes l'chumra. And we paskin in all these cases l'kula like Ravina. However, there's only these three things that we just mentioned, and they are very unique because in all of these three things, Rav Acha is the one who goes l'kula, Ravina is the one who goes l'chumra. We still paskin l'kula, but we paskin like Rav Acha l'kula. Anyway, can I tell you what they are now? So here's what they are. Okay. So let me explain them to you because I just mentioned it quickly, right? So we talk about umtsa da'asmix. You got a piece of meat, and the piece of meat is deeply red, which means that it was impacted in life, ruptured capillaries, and now you've got a lot of blood that had soaked into the muscle. And what's the din about the iser of dam in those kind of things? So if you actually cut through the meat in the area where this blood is, you made like numerous cuts to allow the blood to soak out if you salt it. So you cut it and you salted it. So then it's like any other meat. You could even put this in a cholent, which is not the case where you didn't get out all of the dam. So sometimes you're allowed to eat for tzli, but you can't, like in a piece of liver. But that doesn't mean that you can actually put that into a kedera. But over here, if you cut it in various places so that the blood can easily drain out and you salted it, it's even good for cholent. So I feel the kedera, nami, shapir, dami. If you put it on a spit, then also it's fine because any meat that is roasted on a spit, as anybody can see on those spits, is dripping blood the whole time. Any blood that's in the meat comes out. And therefore, doyev dama, during the roasting process, the blood is going to end up getting out of that meat. The only problem is where you put it on the coals. So sometimes people like the barbecues that are actually made directly on the coals. And here, that's the question. There we have the machlokes Rav Acha and Ravina. And one of them says, even though it's directly on the coals, but the heat of the coals will continue to dry out the blood because it's mishav shoyv. It's like vacuums it out. It pulls it out. Mashenkin, the other one, says it's true, but in this case, because it's directly touching the coals, it cauterizes the meat. And since it cauterizes the meat, the blood is stuck inside and cannot escape. And therefore, it makes it mitzvat samtirei. So it's like an astringent, Rashi uses the word, actually spells out astringent. So it would be a cauterizing effect. And therefore, it keeps the blood inside, and then it would be usher. The same thing is true about testicles, and the same thing is true about what we said before, of the case of the thick blood vessels in the neck. They need to be cut open, and we'd have the same problem if they were roasted directly on the gumri, we'd have the same machlokas of Rav Acha and Ravina about all of these three issues. Now, what about the head of an animal that you want to burn off all of the hair and useless parts? So what would often be done is you just put the head and cover it with hot ash. So you put a little water on it, says Rashi, and then you bury it in hot ashes from a fire. And that ends up burning off the hair that was on the head. So now the question is, what happens to the blood that was in that head? So if you put it down on the Beit HaShrita, so you put this head down on the ashes, and now all of the blood vessels, therefore, are facing downwards, so there's no problem. Because Dayiv Dama Vishori, that allows all the blood to come out because all of the blood vessels are exposed and are facing down, so gravity draws them out. But if you put it on its side, then what happens is the blood can't get out, and it's mikvah coffee, so all the blood basically hardens and congeals inside the skull, and then you can't get it out. Now, how about if you put the head on the nostrils? So it's not on the bottom, but it's not on the side. So if you put, let's say, a toothpick through the nostrils to keep them open, the blood will run out through them. But if not, it is usur. But others say, no, if you put it either on the Beit HaShrita or on the nostrils, you don't have to put anything anywhere, the blood is going to come out and it's mutter. If you put it on the side, then if you put something into it and you make a hole with it, that will allow the blood to come out. But if not, it is usur. So when you learn chulin, you get very graphic. And lots of people don't eat meat anymore after they learn chulin. But they are sissies. The whole point is to become attached, connected, and fill the sense of your own body and the connection that you have to the physical universe around you and the meat that's around you, and to understand those connections. So it's true that it's very difficult sometimes for Adine Nefesh, but this is the way that the Torah actually puts us directly into contact with things very beautifully.
Not to worry, Rebbe, we've got Rav Minyan South Africans. We've got Rav Minyan South Africans, so we can't turn us off meat. It's as hard as we try.
Did I say the Ikari Amri, or did I? I forgot. I say it again. So others learn that actually either the Lechira or the Beit HaShrita, so if you put it on the nostrils or the Beit HaShrita, you don't need anything there. The blood will come out, and on the side, you can make a hole and let the dam out. If not, it would be us. More information, and this brings us back to what we had spoken about earlier when we're talking about the different Gidanoshes. So Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel, there are two basic Gidim. Hapnimi, which is Samuch Le'etzem, is Oser V'chayov Nalav. So you will recall that we actually have a big machlokas between the Teimanim, Psak and the Teimanim, and the Psak of the Ashkenazim, and most of the Sfardim, about what exactly it's referring to over here. One thing we do know is that the Pnimi is definitely, everybody agrees, is the sciatic nerve. So that Pnimi is close to the Etzem. Now we're going to have to see what that means, because it isn't really, but it is. It comes close to the Etzem, but we'll talk about that. So Pnimi is Samuch Le'etzem. That one is not only Usur, that one is Usur B'Diraisa. And that's the one that you would be Chayavin for the eating the Gidanosh. And that's the one that is between, it's the part of the thigh that's facing the other thigh. So that's called the Pnimi. The Chitzon, the outer one, which is actually facing to the outside of the animal as well, that is Samuch L'Basar, that's closer to the muscle, and that is Usur B'Rabbanan, but you're not Chayav for Malkus, because it was only, remember, the sciatic nerve that we call the all the cough, because it's the one that comes from the cough. However, the other nerves that we're talking about here, whatever it is, going to Ashkenazim, the femoral nerve, enters into the thigh only about halfway down and does not go over the cough. So, but we'll see why it is we're referring to it in this fashion. Okay. So ask the Gemara, but a Braita identifies them in the opposite way. The Braita says the Pnimi is the Samuch L'Basar. You said a minute ago, you said that Pnimi is Samuch L'Etzem. So which one? I mean, you're agreeing that it's the Pnimi that's also Meirizim, but why do you describe it so differently? If Shmuel says it's the one that runs down, and we're talking about it as being Samuch L'Etzem, and the Braita says it's not Samuch L'Etzem. Omer of Acha, Omer of Kahana, what this means is that it's Iklude Mikle. Remember that after it goes over the bones, we're talking about the thigh. It has to go over the muscle, then it goes along the thigh, the bone, and then it's like a key in a lock. Iklude Mikle means it's like a key in a lock. It starts penetrating, and we saw this earlier, it penetrates the entire thigh with all kinds of break-off nerves, and those are like a key. It's got a lot of different pins in it, so to speak, and it's like a key that penetrates like a lock. Vahatanya, but we had the one that was called Samach L'Basar, which was the Chitzein. The Braita also says the Chitzein is Samach L'Etzem. And that's the one that's been Rabbanon. So make up your mind. I'm so confused. Which one is which over here? If the stomach goes over it, so then if it goes over the thigh, it seems to be referring again to the sciatic nerve, but the sciatic nerve is also been Raisa, I thought. And now it's saying here it's the Rabbanon. Oh, my review, that's referring to a specific area. It is close to the bone in one particular place. And that's where you find in the butcher shops when they will actually cut off the thigh from the hip bone. And at that particular point, it is true. It is right, it's visible right there as it makes that transition from the hip into the thigh. Itma. Now let's talk about how careful, because that's the way the end of our Mishnah was, can you trust a butcher shop that says that they did a removal of the Gedanosha and they said they did a removal of the Chelev? How trustworthy are they? So first of all, let's talk about the unfortunately common case where you actually found some Chelev behind after the butcher claimed that it had been removed. So tabach shenimtza chelev acharav. If the tabach claims that it was removed and we find a little bit of chelev left, then Rav Yehuda Omer, now in those days they didn't have hechsherim on the butcher shop. And because of that, they were extremely trusted the tabach. But the moment that the tabach was seen to be untrustworthy on any level, they couldn't have him in a butcher shop because we don't have Ashgacha, he was an Ashgacha, and he obviously is not trustworthy. So there were much harsher penalties, essentially, if anything was found wrong. So a tabach shenimtza chelev acharav, how much chelev? So Rav Yehuda says, even if it's the size of one seora, Rav Yochanan says, no, it's only if it was a kezayit. But Rav Papa said, there's no machlokas over here. The question is whether we beat him up or whether we just fire him. So if you find the kezayis, we beat him up, and he gets malchus. And if you find the shear of a seora, then we close the butcher shop, but we don't beat him up. Some very strong reason to make sure your heksher is good. This difference is that when you're talking about the seora, it would be only if it's in one place. But if the Saora is split into different places, and then it's too tiny, and then it not considered to be finding anything at all. But a kizayat could be even, if it's a kizayat across the whole animal, that could be even in different places. That could be even b'shnayim u'b'shlosha mikomot. Here there's a machlokas rishonim as to whether this is actually a machlokas between Mar Zutra and Rav Papa or not. Anyway, bottom line is, halacha is lahalkoto b'kizayit, la'abro b'kisa'ora. So he will get malchus if we find a chokizayit, and he is out of that butcher shop if we find a kisa'ora. And then we said in the Mishnah that the tabachim are not ne'amanim, divrei Rabbi Meir, and the chachomim say they are ne'amanim alav ve'al hacheret. So Reb Chiya bar Rava Amar Reb Yochanan. Actually, you should know that we changed the psak and chazru lomar ne'amanim. So even though originally we actually had paskin that they're not ne'aman, nowadays they are ne'aman. Oh, you got to be kidding, says Reb Nachman. Akshure dare, you're telling me people are getting better? I don't see anybody better. I wouldn't trust them as far as you can throw them. Akshure dare, the deres are getting better? That doesn't make any sense. And now we can trust them. Omer Nachman, that can't be. So the Gemara says the point is that originally we paskin like Rabbi Meir. So remember, what's Rabbi Meir's shita? That this is Naftali's song. Remember, it's not enough to be gomamo. You got to dig the gid. And according to that, it's very difficult to get it out. And since they held like Rabbi Meir, they didn't trust them. And lo avi ma'amne. Asha enkein, then they decided that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and you only need to be gomamo and mashofi. You need just to take it around from the top of the muscle. That's not difficult. And because of that, you can trust the tabachim. Another way of reading this is that actually what we said was going on the seifa of the Mishnah, where on the chachamim, the Chachamim say, Ne'amanim alav v'al hacheilat, that it was always Ne'aman. So come along in this version, Reb Chiya bar Rava Amar Reb Yochanan, they changed the psak later to say that they're not Ne'aman any longer. So the pashtas was, at least that's what the Gemara thinks, that that's because people ended up being less trustworthy and they're not less machmir and you can't trust them anymore. But then what Reb Nachman says doesn't make sense in this version, because Reb Nachman says, well, today they are believed. So on this version, we asked on Reb Nachman, not Reb Nachman asked us. In this version, we said, what? Things have gotten better? Since when have things gotten better? Well, if you listen to the Tisha B'Av Shir of Tashin Pei Vav, you'll see Akshure Dari. Obviously, there's some point where things get better. Okay, but they didn't notice things getting better. So if that's the case, how do you explain it? So here's the point. Mikura Svaruach Rabbi Yehuda. The reason that originally we relied on them was because the psak had been like Rabbi Yehuda. But then they changed their mind and paskined like Rabbi Meir. That means you got to dig the gid. But the point is that since there were some generations in which the butchers were used to paskening like Rabbi Yehuda. So, okay, you know, in butcher school, they would still have the old textbooks, and the old textbook said, gomamo imashofi. So, all right, they got their degree believing gomamo imashofi. So as long as you still had those old textbooks around, obviously, that, you know, it means as long as the butchers were still in that mode, so then we couldn't believe that they did a good job, because since they had been mekabel the halachas like Rabbi Yehuda, they were not going to dig the gid. And therefore, since now we paskin like Rabbi Meir, so it wouldn't be kosher, so we couldn't trust them. But as time went on, it just became more and more normative that everybody understood that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. So according to the Rabbanan, we trust people even in the event that it's something that's difficult, but we would still trust them. And so because of that, once they forgot about this psak, so now we said, that is fine. We're not going to worry that they would give us something that wasn't kosher, at least according to the Chachamim. Now, the question is, why exactly would we say that the lashon that we said is that the Rabbanan say ne'emanim alav v'al hachelev? But I understand, the sheet of Rabbi Meir never mentioned anything about chelev. So why all of a sudden the Rabbanan say, and they're also ne'emanim the chelev? We weren't talking about chelev. We're talking about kidah nasha. So whoever brought up chelev, I understand. Chelev, mandal hashmei? Who mentioned anything about chelev, but all of a sudden the Rabbanan throw in something about chelev? We weren't even interested in that. Well, obviously, what the Mishnah wants you to understand is that from what the Chachamim said, it's clear that what Rabbi Meir had said was that ein emanim alav or on the chelev, so that we can learn now that the Rabbanan said, no, ein emanim alav on the Gid Anasha and on the chelev. So basically, it's just a very short way of telling you over the sheet is of both Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan. Excellent.